plate a potential nugget.
Moving forward, Ravi, one of the questions I think about back to our conversation in the beginning around choices is this even if we look at the example of someone like a Mekin and you starting game, and someone like Padmashree, if I were to relate it to the way I see it, sometimes I find there's an inside-out approach to situations where you say these are the things I'm passionate about, these are the things that give me energy. And, let me take a baby step, see where it goes, take another step, see where it goes, and just sort of keep it anchored around where I find my meaning, purpose, and energy. There's the other approach where you start with a big problem, right? Millions of jobs. We need to solve this at scale. We need to have a systemic response. You know, how do we sort of attack this? And then you come up with an approach and you engage. How have you thought about, is it a binary question? I find that certain kinds of people, you know, I got this feedback once that one of my earlier colleagues told me I have an artisanal mindset, and somehow that stayed with me. And even in the way I think about the podcast or the work I do, it's a very, you know, in a way closer to the Padmashree approach than the Mekin approach, if I may sort of paint those two paradigms. But how do you think about that, and what's your guidance to people when they are at the crossroads?
I don't know. I always go back to that ikigai diagram of the intersecting circles of what you're good at, what you enjoy doing, and what the world needs and values. And somehow you have to try and swim your way to the intersection of this. And obviously it's not a static thing. It's a moving thing. So, there's so many opportunities in the world. There's so many challenges in the world. I'm not drawn to many of them. You pay attention to what you're drawn towards. And usually it'll be things that you enjoy doing. And there's some element of what you enjoy and what you're good at in there. So, for instance, my next big mission is in climate change. And it's in particular around energy transition to renewable energy and energy access. And this is a global scale project. Okay, so we all know that there is this problem out there. Why this problem? Well, I look at myself. I intellectually enjoy very, very complex, wicked problems because it's like a puzzle. So some people like doing Wordle. I like these type of problems. That's me. Okay. So I'm drawn to that. It requires many, many stakeholders to come together and collaborate. Well, that's another thing I both enjoy and I'm fairly good at. I know how to connect and engage and build trust and get people to want to come together behind something. Okay. I have a lot of experience building these types of alliances now, with GAME, then globally with UNICEF. So I'm a little further down that journey in terms of having lived and walked it and knowing what mistakes to avoid than many others. So that's a useful skill. So it is that intersection that you need to find. And it's not something that you can sit and think your way towards. You can't sit in a room or chat with a friend and figure it out. You have to experiment your way. One of the phrases I use most often in all my talks and my writing is Deng Xiaoping's phrase, which is you cross the river by feeling your way across the stones. I think it's the most beautiful metaphor for moving in the face of uncertainty. Okay. So you make experiments, and from the feedback of those experiments, you gradually gravitate to this intersection or sweet spot.
I guess just maybe staying with this for a couple of minutes, you know, when even back to your experience, when you're at Microsoft, when you're doing one thing, often the metrics of progress are easy to measure. But when you're doing many things, often it's hard to get a sense of, you know, am I doing enough? Am I moving the needle? And if I see it in my context, right, I think the how do I transition, how do I reinvent is a mass problem. But I'm trying to sort of have a cottage industry kind of an approach to solving a industrial problem, if you know what I mean. So sometimes I wonder if I'm doing enough. So I wonder if how you think about, you know, how do you think about success and metrics as you move forward?
Clearly, I think that's one of the central questions of life. How will you measure your life? And it's not a new question. It's there.
Yes.
The Greek philosophers talked about it, etc. And it's also something that evolves if you're intentional. And so my definition of what success is at 30 is very different from what it is at 60. There was a couple of questions actually you intertwined cleverly in your thing. But so there's a broader question of how do you figure out how you're going to define success for yourself. And then I thought I heard a second question, which was embedded, which says, look, when you're doing these kind of complex things, how do you know if you're even making a difference? In Microsoft, you know, market share, growth, profitability, yes, are easy metrics. I think these are two different questions. So on the second one, look, we are tackling incredibly complex systems change issues out there. And so you just show up every day and chip away. And mostly nothing is happening. Okay. And then sometimes suddenly something big will improve. Okay. And that's rather hard to predict and so forth. So you can get very depressed because on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis, you don't see much happening. And that's why I draw courage from Mother Teresa. One of the things she said was, in life, there are no great things. There are just small things done with great love. Okay. And sometimes, you know, something small becomes something big, but there's no way of counting on it or predicting it. And so I say, as Buddha says, the most important thing is to show up and sit. Okay. And something might happen. But if you don't sit, nothing is going to happen. That's guaranteed. Mm. So that's how I choose to view it. And so you also need to have a portfolio of things, some of which give you feedback on a daily basis. So going out to the street and being kind to people gives you that kick that you need, that gratification, whereas this long-term stuff may or may not. Also, I've come to the conclusion that none of what I do may actually matter to the world, okay? But it matters profoundly to how I feel about myself. Okay. And therefore, it's worth persisting. Okay. And that has taken some years. Okay. So I'm not under any illusion that we'll create a mass entrepreneurship movement. Obviously, I don't tell funders that. But it's a very, very tough problem. Okay. And we may, you know, make a dent here and a, you know, scratch there. But it is not at all certain that we will succeed in our mission. But just when I look back at the end of my life, I think I'm going to feel very good about at least having not wasted my life just feathering my nest, but you know, tackling something important. So that's a long-winded answer to that second question on these, how do you measure success? Then, I'm profoundly, profoundly influenced by this one sentence from former professor at Stanford called James Marsh. And, you know, I use that as I put it everywhere. I have it in front of me right now. It says, look, at the end of, we are very minor blips in a cosmic story. And he says, all our aspirations for importance and significance are just illusions. All our hopes are minor except to us. But some things do matter. Mostly, and what might make a difference to us is if in our tiny roles, in our brief time, we inhabit life gently and add more beauty than ugliness. So for me, this is the most beautiful statement of how you might want to measure your life. And therefore, what all you have to do is get specific about what do I need to do to walk more gently? What does that mean? Mm. And given the unique assets that I have, that we talked about earlier, different forms of capitalize, how can I contribute to making the world a little more beautiful? Okay. And so I've found my answer to at this point to those two questions. And I think this may be a reasonable question for everyone that is searching, which is, you know, your way of doing it is helping people find their potential. And, you know, making their lives and the world consequently more beautiful in that process. And that's something you're uniquely capable of doing. So, yeah, that's how I've reasoned my way. I'm not saying this is the answer. This is what has worked for me.
And the one frame, one phrase just to understand, Ravi, when you say walk more gently, what does that term mean to you?
Well, one is be kind. Be walk more gently on people's feelings and emotions. Walk more gently on the planet, because we're making incredibly irresponsible thuds. What does that mean in terms of our personal consumption, personal habits, and can you be a little lighter, you know, in terms of that? Yeah, those would be two examples of walking more gently.
Building on the point Ravi makes around walking more gently, one of my earlier guests, Venkat Krishnan, founder of Give India, speaks with a tremendous sense of vulnerability about the notion of an emotional footprint that speaks to a similar theme.
So kind of like the carbon footprint, right? So I think you leave in your interactions with people, you leave them feeling better or feeling worse. So when you leave people feeling better, you have an emotional positive, what Stephen Covey calls emotional bank account balance. And this idea first occurred to me when I read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I am a ridiculously low EQ guy. Everything, even emotions, I actually calculate, think about, etc. And I know that I'm going to have hurt far more people in my life than I would have brought joy to, emotionally speaking. I mean, and I'm not I'm discounting, of course, that I might have helped somebody get food, and therefore they are able to have a happy family, and there is an emotional payoff of all of that, and stuff like that. I'm discounting that. I'm just looking at more from a personal ecosystem point of view, a bunch of, you know, friends, relatives, family, other people, etc. And if I look at their emotional expectations from me, I'm going to leave most people shortchanged on that in my life. And, you know, it hurts that's going to happen. But I do keep going back to it periodically. It's difficult to change yourself as you get older, but I've tried and I've made some changes. But, you know, I'm wired the way I am. And my one regret when I finally die is going to be that I will have left a negative and emotional footprint.
I guess there's an opportunity for each one of us to focus not just on the what we do, but how we come across when we do what we do.